Valley 104.9 goes behind the scenes with former King County Councilperson Kathy Lambert every Tuesday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 6 p.m. as part of Valley 104.9's Community Talk and Info Sundays.
This is Behind the Scenes with Kathy Lambert. Thank you for joining me. This is now May, and as they say, April showers bring May flowers, and I'm sitting here looking at my beautiful purple lilac, which is an offshoot of the plant my grandmother gave me probably about 50 years ago. And so every year that it blooms, I think about my grandma and the beautiful fragrance that she not only adds to my yard, but when I open the door to the house, and also to memories in my life. So I hope that you are ready for a good May. And there are so many things happening right now. So I wanted you to hear some of the funny things before we get into the ones that aren't quite so funny. And one of the funny things is, did you know that our area is number two for naked gardening? And that's important because World Naked Gardening Day is coming up. Did you even know that we have such a thing as Naked Gardening Day? Well, I sent this article that came out of Northwest News to my neighbor on one side to tell her, because she is a gardener, that this is coming up, but to assure her that she will not have to worry about looking over the fence because I will not be partaking. But, you know, Seattle is known for some pretty crazy things. And in the article, it talks about that we are ranked the second best city in the nation for naked gardening. I've been here for many years. And I had no idea that we had this fame. So they talked about how the rankings come from a lawn care company who evaluates 500 U.S. cities in 11 different categories that include things like weather, the legality of public nudity, online interests, and all kinds of things. And of course, our area rates right up there. Now, they do go back to some history, and knowing the history of anything is a good idea. So they go way back to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Well, I would just have to mention that at this point, we had not been given clothes as a society. And since we soon got clothes and have been wearing them for thousands of years, I think that that's an interesting comment that they go back to that as the model, but that's great. And of course, there was only two people in the world at that point. And if it were just my husband and I, would think we could deal with this. But since there's more people in the world now than then, I think there's some other issues to deal with. And so one of the reasons that they said that we ranked so high was because Seattle is such a tolerant area towards another euphemism, clothing optional behavior. Which is very interesting. And they talk about a Seattle philosophy professor who I think is the husband of somebody that I used to know. So when I saw the name, I thought, that's interesting. And so they talked about how working in the soil and the ground can be liberating, and how good it is to be healthy and working in the ground. And I do know that that's true, that they say that it's good for your health and your heart to be out working in the soil, and that it does take some energy. And I know that, you know, hoeing the weeds up does take some energy, and certainly gives you some feelings of accomplishment when you look back and you have taken the weeds out of an entire area. And so that's always good. And then they talked about that some cities are not as proficient in this particular area because of the temperature. And yes, I don't think naked gardening in Anchorage, Alaska or Wisconsin would be a good idea. And also they said that in warmer places, like say Arizona, or of course Flagstaff can get cold too, but some of the other places. And then they said that that cities in Washington, Bellevue ranked 214th, Vancouver 112th, Tacoma 93rd, Kennewick 89th, Yakima 67th, and Spokane 21. So anyway, so if you know people there, you might want to tell them about these wonderful rankings. But anyway, I thought that that was pretty funny. And so they did end with a very good tip to never go without your clothes when you're operating a lawnmower. So I thought that was a pretty funny article. And again, it shows how we rate with a variety of things that are a bit odd. And so talking about a bit odd, the legislative session has ended. Thank goodness that they have ended. It's quite a session, and there are many things that came out of this session that are sort of mind-boggling, actually. So at the beginning of the session, they came out and said they were $12 billion short on the budget. And then another time they said 13, and then another time 15, and then they were saying recently 16, which, because I understand federal and state budgeting, the state budget is pretty much an estimation because you balance against the proposed revenue that you think you're going to get because it's not an exact science, which is why you need to be even more careful in your estimations. So they came out with the 16 million, but they decided rather than making any cuts of any magnitude, they started out with proposing a little over $12 billion in increases. And then they talked that down in negotiations to $9.3 billion in increases, which is what passed. And that is an 8% growth. I don't know many people that got an 8% income bump. And when I saw the final number of 78 billion with a B as the budget, I was just shocked because when I first started writing the state budgets many years ago, it was 17.2. And those of us that were wanting more cuts, we were trying to get the budget to be 14.9 billion. So from 1996, where it was around, well, we were fighting for 14.9, and now to find that's the amount of deficit is just mind-boggling to me. I realize there's inflation, I realize there's a lot of changes, but a lot of people have come to this area since then. So there's several things that happened during this legislation that I such a session that I want to go over with you. First of all, the good news is that there was a bill that would change the cap from 1% of the value of your property to 3%. That has been pushed by King County Council for a long time. They want to take it up to 3%. And at this point, that was shelved, killed, stopped, whatever word you want to use. And so that's the good news, that our property tax limit will stay at this point at 1%. But because I know how much there are several members of the King County Council, including two of them that are running for executive, that want this to go through. And so you really need to be aware of this gap because it's been before the legislature. It went through the process this time, but it doesn't mean that it won't come up next session or the session after. So during this, what we call interim, in between sessions, you really need, when you see an elected official out, ask them, where are you on the 1%, 3% cap? And if they tell you whatever story that, but the bottom line is that they think 3% is lovely, then you need to put in your brain, I cannot vote for somebody that is what they believe because it'll be happening. And on one hand, we're saying we don't have enough housing. Housing is too expensive, which I totally agree with. And people are being priced out of their houses. But if you elect somebody that wants to take the cap off of the 1%, which gives at least some kind of safety, because I can tell you from the inside that there are lots of people who just want more and more tax dollars. And so if that person says to you that they like 3%, you need to not vote for them. I don't care what number letter is after their name. You need to be able to say no. It's time we start holding elected officials accountable. That if this person votes on things that you don't like or that you don't want or that's hard on your family's income, don't vote for them. And until you get that clear, we are going to continue to have legislative sessions that ratchet up more and more and more money. And that is dangerous because a lot of people are talking about leaving this state. The other thing is not only people leaving the state, but businesses leaving the state. So one of the things that did pass that is very difficult is the B&O tax increase, where they said that if a group of people go on strike, that they will pay several weeks of their salary. Now, some of the unions have a striking fund that people who work and have a union, I used to be in a union, we paid money to the striking fund. But we did not expect our employer that we were negotiating with to be held hostage to continue paying our salary. So you need to make decisions on whether the amount that you're working to increase your salary is worth being without pay for a certain amount of time. Otherwise, I would pretty much guarantee that the strikes will go on longer. And for those parents who have in the past, even though it's supposedly not legal in this state, for teachers to strike, there are many strikes and they've not really been enforced. And so it's one of those laws that is on the books but not enforced. So it continues to happen, but it will continue to happen longer if the school districts, i.e., your tax dollars, will be paying for even more 4 weeks of pay while they are on strike. So I think that is a very interesting thing to know. And several businesses have said we can't afford the unpredictability of that, and we are planning on moving out of the state. One of the things that, since the 1 to 3% cap did not go through, there was authorization for school levies to be increased by about $500 per child for upcoming levies, which is a 20% increase over 5 years plus inflation. So if the jurisdiction, and of course many of the rural jurisdictions won't deal with this, they will vote no, which means that there won't be increases, but it could go up over 5 years to 60% or so. So that's all unpredictable when you start adding inflation to this, as well as increasing the levy amount. Now, we have been under court order as a state several times because of what was called the McCleary decision, that doesn't matter whether you're in Okanagan or whether you're in King County, that the education per student should be the same. And in some places, there's PTESAs, there's booster clubs, there's all kinds of different groups that give money into the schools. And so it's not equal across the state. And so because of the McCleary decision, and then later on a couple of years ago, there was a new formula. And as all these formulas change, it's like a little patchwork. You put a patch in the hole in the wall and say, okay, this fixes the McCleary decision that is equal across the state. Well, it's not. And because some places pass levies, some places like in Seattle, there's very few taxes they don't love, and other places there's no tax they love. So over a period of time, those are going to be again out of balance, and then they'll come back and say that you're out of sync, and we will go through this pattern all over again. So it's setting up another failure, and I think that's very sad. In addition, we have one of the highest per student costs in the nation, and it's approximately $20,000 per student. And the outcomes that we're getting for that 20,000 has been very, very poor. And there is a very high percentage of children in fourth and eighth grade when the tests are given who are not doing well in reading and math at grade level. And at the college level, there are a lot of remediation classes because the students coming in from many of our high schools are not capable for the beginning information that they will need to get into college. So all of these things interact. And the issue is that if you look at your property tax bill, or you can go online on our assessor's page, our assessor is a incredibly wonderful public servant. He has done everything he can to fight for the poor, the senior citizens. He's helped work raise the amount of income a senior can have to have their taxes either reduced or eliminated. He's done amazing work. One of the things he's done is on his website, which is the assessor's website, you can get on and see how many taxes go to which taxing district and which taxes are approved by the legislative bodies and which one are by citizen vote. And at one point in parts of the county, it was over 50% that was citizen increases. And I remember a darling lady calling me and being very angry that her taxes had gone up. And so I asked her, at that point there were three taxes on the ballot. And I said, did you vote for any of them? She said, well, honey, I vote for all of them. I love taxes. And I said, well, that's why your tax rate went up because you voted for those taxes. And she said, oh, I thought that was government money. I didn't know that it was my money. And so I had to explain to her that government money is your money and that that's what taxes are all about. So it's never dull, some of the questions that you get. But anyway, so if you look at that, you will see the school taxes, and the school taxes are in two places. And so you need to look on both sides of the graph and add those two numbers together. People would call and say, well, how come I have, this number for school and this number for school? Why aren't they the same? Because it's my school tax. And when I would tell them, oh, that's because you have to add them together, they were like, what? So in most cases, and of course, it's different in every part of the county because you're in different taxing districts based on where your fire district is, where your cemetery district is, where a recreation district is. There's many, many different districts. So it's different for each parcel. So that's why you need to get on and why I can't say the exact amount because it's specific to your area. So look at that and add those two numbers together and look at what that number is. And in as a general rule, I would say that number approximates about 50% of your property tax bill. And I think it's interesting, and I'll take my own home for instance. We haven't had a child come to the schools in this area. My child is now an adult and approximating 50 years old, which is amazing because I only claim to be 28, so I have no idea how my children can be that old. But that put aside, so it's been a long time since I've had a child in the schools. And yet, all these years, I am continuing to pay that. And the answer to that is we want our community to have well-educated students, and we all benefit from a well-educated group of young people as well as adults. But at some point, for older people, that becomes very cost prohibitive. And if they are on a fixed income, having this 8% increase and other increases, 20% here, 8% there, it becomes cost prohibitive for people to stay. And so I know that is a very difficult conversation, but at what point should a senior citizen be able to be exempt from school taxes? When you're 80, when you're 90, never, which is what it is right now. But it is a social issue to be discussed to be sure that senior citizens do not get taxed out of their houses, as many are. So during this debate, where they went from discussing over 12 billion more and then saying, oh, well, we didn't take all the things we discussed, we only took 9.3, isn't that wonderful? No, actually, it's not. It's better than the worst case scenario, but the better case scenario would be to look at what are some of the things that we're doing that are not necessary? There are many, many, many good things. There are many things as I go to the store that I say, oh, that would be really nice. That's really nice. I like this. Oh my gosh, that's got all these calories. I'd love to have that. But at some point, you have to use some logic. Yeah, if I eat all these really delicious things that are full of sugar, I will probably gain weight. Or, don't really need that. I'll wait till it comes on sale. You make as a consumer different decisions, but when it's taxes, the people who are making decisions for you seem to not be looking at, well, this is good, let's just pay for it, rather than what is the hierarchy, the priority. And both Governor Lowry and Governor Gregoire did do work on trying to look at the priorities of government. And that was a very important exercise because we found there were a lot of things that were being paid that had been obsolete, or that were no longer necessary, or were done for political reasons, or lots of reasons that they weren't necessary anymore. And so we made a lot of cuts, and every single thing that was ever put in a budget had at least somebody who liked it and wanted it. So when you start saying, I think that we don't really need this expenditure anymore, you'll find people coming out of the woodwork saying, but that's my ox and I don't want you goring it. And so then there's political pressure to just say, okay, we'll just keep paying for everything. And so there is no zero-based budgeting where you start over every year. Many municipalities just say, okay, whatever you had last year, we'll take a little bit off here or put a little bit there around the edges. But very seldom do you get into the base of the budget to say, what are all these expenditures? And we've seen at the federal level how when you do start to go to the base and start really looking at what is in the budget and exposing it, you find a lot of angry people saying, well, why did you pull that out? How did you find it? And so you do take a lot of backlash. And so that's why a lot of people have not really gotten into finding out all of the things that are in the budget. But at some point, that does need to happen, both at the King County Council level, which has all kinds of silly things in, as well as the state level. So if we keep voting for people who keep putting these things like participatory budgeting into the account where they can put extra money to a particular district or a particular group and not be transparent, as they should be on exactly how that's being decided, then it's a mess. That's all I'm going to say on that. It's a mess. So one of the other things that's a mess is that during this legislative session, there were 169 bills that had an emergency clause on it. Now, what is an emergency clause? Emergency clause says this is so important that it has to go through the way it is, because if we don't put an emergency clause, somebody might do an initiative and or a referendum and stop us from making this expenditure or decision. So essentially they're saying this is such an emergency that we do not want citizens to have any input. 169 times. So 169 times they thought that hearing from you would not be necessary. So it's so amazing to even say this to you. It sounds so bizarre. So the city of Redmond a couple months ago decided on an issue that had to do with homelessness that they didn't really want to hear from the citizens, and so they put an initiative, a ordinance forward, piece of legislation that limited the amount of time that citizens could talk, and people were outraged, as they should be, that they were not going to be able to talk for 3 minutes. It was going to be reduced to one. And if you ever had something you wanted to say, 1 minute is usually not very long to get your entire point across. And then they started with other things that you have to be there certain early, and then you have to. You can't, if you get there a little bit late, you can't sign in to speak. And you have to speak only on the topics that's on the agenda. You can't speak to anything different. And, all these limitations. And just this week, the same thing happened over in Ellensburg, where the council decided on a ordinance, which is their annual ordinance, that where they used to in the past get like five, six, seven over the last couple of years, less than two hands full of input on their growth management policy. Well, this year they got over 300 and they didn't like it. So they passed a bill saying that they're not going to accept input on this next year. The idea that any government body would in any way limit the citizens. The government works for us. The government is ours to oversee, not they oversee us. And that's where things have gotten a little backwards. So it breaks my heart that Redmond attempted to do this. Many of us went and complained and fought it. So, it didn't get implemented. But one of the council members actually wrote a text to somebody during the meeting saying how horrible the citizens were. And I had to write him saying, that when that was found by somebody and it went around, and I, as everybody who got all the emails, saw the text, I wrote saying, saying that your constituents are, whatever different words he was using that were negative is probably not what you should be doing at all, and especially during the meeting, that is inappropriate. So, and now, Ellensburg, which is not our district, but it's happening, and we need to be very careful about that. So, we do not want the legislators to put or propose 169 emergency clauses. There have not been 169 emergencies. So, if this were money for a forest fire, then I would be like, hey, of course. If this were, for a municipality that had an earthquake and lots of damage, of course. But I don't know anything that really required 169 emergency clauses. Now, not all of those passed. 47 of them did pass. But I think that's way too high. And it's something that we need to be aware of. Another thing that is going on is that some of these bills were passed at 1:30 a.m. And I talked to a number of legislators. When I was in the legislature, our speaker would say, okay, we're going to have floor action while we're voting on things from this time to this time. And then we're going to be in caucus to discuss things from this time to that time. And then we're going to do more floor action from this time to this time. We're going to stop for dinner and then we will adjourn or we will not adjourn. We'll come back in an hour and we'll work from this time to this time. And so you knew what your schedule was. Well, in the last couple of years, the schedule's just whatever, unpredictable. And so people are just sitting around waiting. Are we going back into session? Are we not going back into session? So we're paying all these people to just sit around. And that is not my idea of the best way to run anything. And passing things at 1:30 a.m. is not a good idea. Several of the legislators have said that they're working late, 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 and that they get tired. And so, are the best decisions being made at 1:30 in the morning? Or at, for some people, 11 o'clock in the at night. They tease me because when they tell me this, I laugh because most people know that 11 o'clock at night is, not late for me. And so, but I know that there are a lot of people that want to be in bed at 9:30, 10 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock. And so to be working people at what their normal biorhythm bedtime is not a good thing. And it's happening constantly. So the management of the floor action and the unpredictability of the schedule is not okay. And so these 47 initiatives, not initiatives, 47 emergencies that were passed, I think are another thing that we should be watching. That no, you don't put an emergency clause and keep my voice out as a citizen. And I'm going to be watching. Are you doing that? So are you for the 1% cap to be raised to 3? Are you endorsing a lot of emergency clauses for non-emergencies? Are you being cautious about how you're spending? And are you really delving into what things are costing? And the issue with the B&O tax on putting a burden on businesses that they can't afford and that's unpredictable. I used to own a business and I would make my budget out for the year. And, if my employees decided that, come June, they wanted to go on strike and I didn't have employees at the top of my season, then I wouldn't be able to sell as much. I wouldn't be able to deliver as much, whatever the person's position was. And therefore, I would have less income and still be paying out salaries. So I know what that feels like, and I can understand why businesses would say this state is too unpredictable in the way that they handle businesses and make things so complicated. When I first got in the legislature, there was a form, and I was looking at the form, and I said to the people, the font on this is too small. And they said, well, how do you know that it's so small? And I said, because I've had to make out that form. And it's very difficult to look at that. You need to increase the font. So, when people are trying to make out paperwork, that it's at least at eight font or 10 would be even better. So the things that people in the government are doing to businesses are not user-friendly. And not using a font that's easily visible on forms they need to fill out is also just one more tiny little example of, how businesses are treated in the state. And we've already seen somebody leave the state that had lots of resources. And people say, well, who cares? But no, we should care. And we want to keep as many businesses in the state as we possibly can. So another thing that happened this session was House Bill 1696, which is on reparations. And, as a society, at some point we need to say we all work together and whatever benefit person X can have, person Y can have. And if there's a problem with either one of them getting whatever the service is, then that's not okay. And so in this reparations bill for homeowners, it's only for first-time Black homeowners. And they made it so that under the Covenant Home Owners Program, they changed the area median income for eligibility. They said that up to about $125,000 of that loan can be forgiven, and they changed the oversight of the committee. There are many youth that would love to buy a house. There are many people who are not in their 20s that have never bought a house and would love to buy a house. And so to say that we're only going to help one group of people is really unfair to everybody that is not in that group. So I think that as we look at laws, how many laws pertain to certain areas, to certain groups, and where are the costs going? And looking at, what groups are included and what groups are not included. And I know even looking at some of the council grants that came out in the last year or two, they were very specific of who could apply. And I had mayors call me and say, in my community, we don't have that particular group that needs this. Another group needs this. But because the way the grant applications are written, the people in my neighborhood that need it aren't going to be even able to apply. And I think that's wrong. Everybody should be able to apply and be able to then, make their case as to why they should have whatever the asset is. And really, we should be focusing on the assets that belong to everybody. So at the state level, the highway system and, the schools are the focus. At the county level, it should be the police and some roads and transportation also. Pardon me. So, when you're looking at the county budget right now, one of the things that they're talking about is a $30.2 million reduction in the sheriff's budget. Now, they've been talking about this for a long time, and it's something that some of us said, hey, we need to do these things to start making more money available over here. We need to do some cost cutting over there. We need to streamline some things. But there were some people on the council who wanted to defund the sheriff's office and who wanted certain things. And being that they had loud voices, they were able to make some very strong, in my mind, detrimental issues to the sheriff's office and also to the courts. The courts need money and they also need to be streamlined. There was a judge that I was working with who was the head of a particular unit of the court, and she thought also, as I did, that this process in the court needed to be streamlined. And so she and I walked through the process, and in order to file, they handed me a 60-page document, and I was like, oh my goodness. And part of the document had to be filed in a year. Well, if you are going through legal issues, knowing where things are in a year is like really not a good plan, because lots of times when people are going through legal issues, there are lots of things going on, which could include a move, a divorce, all kinds of things. And things get lost, and a year later, that's not appropriate. So, what does a person need when they come the first day? And with the computer programs, could we then at program the computer to send them other information later on, and the part that was for a year later, program that to show up in their inbox in a year? There were things that could be streamlined, and this judge was lovely, and she was perfectly willing to work with it. And unfortunately, there were some people who did not want that to happen, and none of those have been completely revamped in the way that they should have been. So, yes, I think the courts should have more money, but I also think that there needs to be a lot of efficiencies done. And I went to a conference in San Diego, and it was on court efficiency, and I did not realize that one of the county computer people was at that conference. And I got so excited in this room of about 500 people that I made a sound. And just then I got a text from the computer person that said, Councilmember Lambert, are you in San Diego? And I texted it back and I said, yeah, how did you know? And he said, I just heard you squeal. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you recognize it. And I said, yeah, that's my happy sound. So we were able to talk about what were some of the things that he had heard at the conference and some I'd heard that we wanted to implement. So I do believe that the courts need more money, but I do believe also that they need to be able to streamline many of their processes and to be able to do things in a much better way than is currently the way that things are happening. So there's a lot of costs that with more efficiency and with the DOGE people looking at the federal budget. I know that for some people, just hearing that turns your eyes green and orange and purple and your hair stand on edge. But I did see two now interviews of the DOGE committee where they talked about what they're finding and much of what they're saying. I'm like, oh yeah, I saw that at the county level. Oh yeah, I saw that at the state level. It's nothing that they have said has surprised me. The magnitude is disgusting, but the principle is there all across government. And I think that as we look at taxes and how people can afford to live, we need to really look at what are the expenditures, what are our priorities, not what is good and what is not good, but everything can be good, but we can't afford everything. So what are our priorities? And again, I applaud Lowry and Gregoire for actually doing that and finding a number of things that were changed way back. I think on the first time that I watched one of the DOGE interviews, I was totally shocked by who was on the committee. I had been under the impression that these were all young computer geniuses and that they really didn't know much about economics or budget or anything like that. And government's not the same as business, which is semi-true. It's not the same because you have to take every client, which can be very costly. But the principles of financial accountability and honesty should be equal. And so that was the first thing, that the people who were there were assigned to different departments to oversee depending upon their own expertise. And it wasn't all people in their early 20s and 30s. There were people all across the age spectrum that had expertises that had been brought in. And in the one that I saw on May the 2nd, the interview was talking about how many different wonderful federal employees had come forth and said, "Can you fix this? This is a problem. That's a problem." The employees themselves are giving ideas. And because these people have such expertise on what programs are out there that can easily be adapted, things that have been processes for years and years that are all done on paper can easily be done now over the computer. The retirement system to retire from the federal government was taking 6 months and voluminous amounts of paper. They held up in the interview several of the files that were very thick, and they said these were not the thickest ones. Some of them were on major carts. They talked about the fact that it's going to be revamped, so the system will go from 6 months down to 3 days. So when you can start re-looking at how you do things, you will be able to see that there's lots of savings that could be available. So the first time I was concerned that it was just young people and that there wasn't a lot of expertise. And there were about 10 people that were in that interview. Then on the interviews in early May, I saw 20 people that included people of all age ranges and even more people than were at the first one, obviously. And they were talking about their individual expertises and how, as the employees saw that their issues had solutions that were easier, that they were leaving behind new systems, new computer program ideas, and doing some things that should be helpful to all of us. So, it's unfortunate that Elon Musk has been able to do all these things, but not get credit as a hero for finding these. So that is a concern to me that, these things needed to happen. I remember at the state level when we tried to do things, the backlash that was ugly. And I felt a lot of the backlash at the county. I was called all kinds of names because I thought things needed to be cut. You say that needs to be cut, then you're mean to this group, or you're cruel, or you're this, or you're that. It's amazing the pressure that comes on you when you say, "I don't think this is a good expenditure," or "I don't think that this is the most important expenditure. I think this one's more expensive, more impressive, or necessary." There was one issue that really caused a lot of backlash because I wanted during COVID to put more money into food banks. And they said no, they weren't going to do that, that it needed to go into another holiday for King County employees. And I'm like, wait a minute, the employees get plenty of holidays. And during COVID, many of them weren't even coming to work, and that people needed food, and that this was not the time to give another King County employee holiday when that money, which was several million dollars, could go into food. I was outvoted and I was called many names. So I know firsthand that when you stand up for what you think is right, you will be criticized. And I can relate in one small little piece to the kind of pressure that Elon is going through. And it breaks my heart because I know it's not easy. And I experienced a tad of what he is going through. Again, whether you agree or disagree, you want to know, you don't want to know where your tax dollars are going. I think that as educated members of our society, we all need to know where our money's going. And with Redmond and Ellensburg and even down in the legislature, they rewrote many bills afterwards. Now, yes, we did have amendments on the floor, but we did that, after hearings. And I don't really remember any time where we just did something completely different. What we did have a problem with was when we would go out to reconciliation and people in the early days would put all their favorite bills into one bill and say, okay, well, if you want this kind of thing in a negotiation, you want this, okay, well, I'm going to put both of those in, but I'm also going to put in five other things. And Speaker Ballard talked about how he didn't approve of that. And eventually we stopped doing that. If you want to go to reconciliation, you deal with this bill and then you deal with that bill. But we're not going to do it behind closed doors. We're not going to be doing it where it becomes a big smorgasbord of everybody's pet projects. So I really re appreciated always Speaker Ballard's integrity to say, no, we're not going to do things like this. And when I see these things happening at the state or the federal government, I'm like, that's just not the way to run the ship. Too bad somebody doesn't have the integrity to stand up and go, no, we're not going to do this. So at the state level, they put a lot of new things in after the hearings. And so there wasn't any time for citizen input. And of course, with the emergency clauses on 169 bills, had all of them passed with an emergency clause, we wouldn't be able to give any testimony. So there's a lot of things going on. And I hope that some of the things that you've heard help you to be more educated as to what's happening behind the scenes, what's happening in Olympia, and to really look at what things are important to you. Do you want your taxes to not have a cap? Do you want more money going into certain activities with certain requirements that exclude other people, like with participatory budgeting at the county level, mostly goes into one district. And is that fair to the rest of the county? It's beyond heck no, in my opinion. But what do you believe? And not everybody's going to believe exactly as I do. But I think when you hear some of these things, you're like, whoa, I know a lot of people that I talk to say, I had no idea this was happening. And I'm like, I know, that's why I'm telling you. So that you can pick what things are important to you? What do you want? And then, now that the session's over, talk to the elected officials. Many of them are up for election and ask them these questions. And don't give them a bye if on things like parental notification or, the emergency clauses, the caps, things that are structural. You may not always agree with every bill that comes in and out, but there are certain structural things that is how a person's integrity is when they evaluate a bill, and how much are they in the pockets of this group or that group? Will they stand up to this union or that union? I know one time when I stood up to a union who had emailed me earlier in the day that the bill that was before them, before us, they had come to a compromise among themselves. But the other group, they didn't get any input in. And so they said, yes, Group X and their team got all the details worked out. So now they agree. But they didn't talk to Group Y, who was equally impacted. And so when I saw what was happening at the council, I said, I would like to put on the record that the other group, Group Y, sent us a letter that should be on the public record that not everybody agreed to this. And what were the provisions that they didn't agree to? And later, I got a email that was not very pleasant. And the person said to me, "Didn't you read my email?" And I said, "Yeah, I read your email, and I'm happy that Group X is all in agreement. But that doesn't negate the fact that Group Y is going to be negatively impacted, and nobody is talking about that, and it needs to be on the record." And so later I got an email saying, "We don't like you anymore because of your tone and tenor." And I'm like, "What the heck is my tone and tenor?" So one of the chapters in my book is called Tone and Tenor. How dare they come and say that I put on the record something they didn't want on the record, which happened to be public record. But not everybody had access to that at that moment. And I knew that. So I thought everybody should know all the details. And of course, that got me lots of criticism. But when you're an elected official, you get a little bit used to this and you realize that you expose truth, and sometimes people don't like the truth being exposed. So whether you agree with somebody or not, at least support people that have the integrity to stand up. One of the men last at the interview, one of the 20 with the Elon group, he actually was given the opportunity to come and help because he feels so strongly about our country not going bankrupt and our country being modernized in its computer programs, some that go back into the 50s and 60s, that he left Harvard so that he could come and help. And the interviewer asked him, "You left Harvard?" And he said, "Yeah, I did, because I care about my country." And here, he's saying his friends don't want to talk to him anymore because he's exposing things that, some people don't want exposed. So whether you agree or disagree, the idea that we have people who are presenting things that have been in the dark, that is important. And I will tell you that there's a lot of in the dark that needs to come forward. And there's a lot in the dark in education, which I will get into more. And for those of you that don't know, there is a Department of Justice and a Department of Education joint effort coming to our state. And the letter just came out the beginning of May. And so I will do more on that topic. But we really need to know what is happening, what is real, what are we being told. And one of the things that I am very excited about is the amount of information that is available from various news sources. We don't have to go to Station X or, whatever station you listen to or don't listen to. I know I used to listen to the radio on my way to work on a conservative station and on my way back on a liberal station so that I could get a balance of who was saying what. And, because I was involved in many of the things they were talking about, I would be able to say, aha, they don't have that quite right. Or, wow, they really did a job on twisting that one. And unfortunately, our local newspaper also would decide what they will print and what they won't print. And there were multiple times where I was told that they were not going to print something because they didn't want to make a certain government employee angry. And I'm like, well, it's your job as the media to tell the truth to the people so that they know what's happening. And if you don't print the story, then they're in the dark as to why the ramifications are going to happen. And, over the years, my dad told me a couple of years ago, if you tell the truth, ultimately, if it is the truth, it will come to be the truth. So it's been interesting the last couple of years that all the things that I was criticized for have now come to be accurate. And I have to smile when things show up. And as I told you on this show not too long ago, I left a message for the editorial board at the Times that I was ready to accept their apology for some of the things that they said I said incorrectly, which are now proven to be accurate. So it's been a couple months and I have not heard from them. But the point is that there were things said that were not accurate, and they have turned out to be accurate, as I said. You have to know who you are getting your information from. What is their bias? Who's supporting them? Why would they say these things? And to go to alternate sources. I think it's so wonderful. And I used to have lobbyists come into my office, pro and con, and say, okay, I want you, the pros, to tell me what you think the con on this article is going to say or this issue. And you, Mr. Con, I want you to tell me what you think Mr. Pro is going to say on this issue. And first of all, the lobbyists were kind of shocked the first time I asked for them to do that. But we had negotiations that ended up being solved because Mr. Pro would say, well, I think Mr. Khan, you're going to say this. And he'd go, no, I don't believe that. And so there were conversations that were held where we came to really good solutions because one thought the other thought something different. And so we were able to say, okay, where is the common ground here and how can we deal with this issue? So conversation, honesty, integrity, and being open are vital. And we do not have that. And common sense is just something that we as a society have to say, we got to get back to common sense. We have to be able to say, I hear you, but common sense says X. For instance, police pursuit. Our legislator in the 45th District Senate, she, Senator Dingra, was the one that really pushed for no police pursuits and very limited police pursuits after they tried to correct it. When all the experts, the sheriff's departments, the various police agencies came out and said, no, we do need to do these pursuits. And, as many of you know, I'm a policeman's daughter. And so I heard lots and lots of stories about police pursuits and how they worked and, hearing them on the radio. And so this is something that's not new to me. And I understand how this works and how important it is. And in King County, where we don't have enough sheriff's deputies, how we find out people that have existing warrants is because when you pull them over, they check your record. And if you have an outstanding warrant, then you get arrested. We don't have the officers to go out and necessarily start issuing warrants on people. So if you take that away, you have more people who have gotten away with criminal behaviors. And if you don't stop criminal behaviors, you'll get more of them because there's a lack of accountability. And so people don't believe that they need to adhere to the law. So it's really important. So it took several sessions to try to fix the mess of changing police pursuits in such a dramatic way. And is that okay with you? And even if it's not on criminal issues, in Redmond, we had a naked man running down, the middle of Avondale, and they couldn't really do anything. And, before they would have picked him up, put a blanket around him. Of course, it might have been naked gardening day, who knows? But, there were things that they could do to help people. And so many times, people doing odd things were people who were in some kind of crisis. And I remember many times dad coming home and saying, to my mom, can you get me a blanket? Can you get a coat that, you don't want anymore? Can you get this or that? Or will you make something to eat? Whatever it was, because there was somebody on the street in crisis. And dad would go and take it to that person and try to help them through. But if he didn't have the ability to stop people or, whatever, you don't get to hear the story of why is this happening? And lots of times there's more to the story than just a naked man running down Avondale Road. What was going on with him? And of course he ran into the woods and who knows what happened to him. So the idea that this what I think is common sense. Of course, the police should pull people over when there's irrational behavior. And now that we have cameras, which I voted for cameras, and there were people in the beginning that had negative feelings about wearing cameras. But after the first year, they came back to us and said, we are so thankful because when we show the person complaining about our behavior that we have the tape and it's clear that their story was not accurate. It really helped reduce lawsuits, and people can see what really happened. So I'm really glad that we have that. So we have the evidence of what really happened, and then we can deal with that if there's a complaint. But basically, we need to be able to help people. And oftentimes, people do odd things as part of exhibiting their crisis. So, looking at all these aspects of this law, that law, all the different kinds of things, and figuring out for yourself what's important to me and how am I going to get with this legislator or this council member or whatever. And if you believe as a citizen that you should be able to talk a full 3 minutes if you go to the council meeting and that you should be able to sign in, up to the first 10 minutes or 15 minutes of the meeting going on. If you believe, that you should be able to talk on whatever topic you want to talk about, then you need to be aware, oh, the entire council was for that. Huh. Maybe I don't agree with that, and they're taking away my right as a citizen to have oversight over my government, which is supposed to be working for me. So we cannot continue to vote for people who have turned the ship. When, Tom Huff was the chair of the state budget committee, and I was on that committee, we had cleaned up a lot of things in the budgeting process, in how things were done, how things were calculated. We put a rainy day account together. All the things that were done that put the state in good financial place. And now, a decade or two later, they're saying that they're this far in debt. How the heck did you not know this was happening? That you could get whatever the number is, they're saying now about $16 billion. How could you not know that you would be $16 billion in debt? And if you did, which you have been talking about, so yes, you did know, why didn't you do something? So interestingly enough, the current governor, who was attorney general, hired a bunch of new, like several hundred new attorneys in the AG's office. Then he becomes governor and he tells the new AG, you have too many attorneys. I mean, hello. I would be like, if I were Attorney General Brown, I'd be like, excuse me, weren't you the one that hired all these people? And now you tell me I have too many? Huh, that's odd. So, when you know these background stories, you need to really think about, is this efficient? Is this what I want? Do I want my elected officials to be intimidated, called names, whatever, so that they will be pressured? They're already talking about some implications of the Supreme Court. And I super hope that the threats against the justices will be curtailed very quickly so that people realize that is not going to happen. Having any elected official or judge be intimidated to make the right decision. Or, as also happening right now, making decisions beyond their scope. And unfortunately, people don't really understand the levels of courts and scope, which is an issue. And we'll take some education because most people don't realize the different tracks. So get to know your elected officials, get to know what they believe, look at their voting record, it's made available. And you can get online and look at what bills did they vote for. It's on LegWA.gov, and you can look at all the bills they sponsored, what they voted for, and see, is this person agree with me 80% of the time or 90, or probably not 100, but predominantly they agree with my view. Or do they only agree with me 20% of the time? If you are electing somebody that only agrees with you like 20% of the time, you are making a bad decision. So don't keep voting for somebody if they play political games. And there were several very bad political games in this last legislation that had to do with parental rights. And if you are a parent, you should be livid. So in future ones, we're going to talk about parental rights. And we're also going to talk about what's happening with the DOE and DOJ coming in on our school system here and what Chris Ragdoll is doing. So, with that, I will say good night and I hope you've learned some things. And if you feel comfortable sometimes, just shoot me a note saying that you learned something new, or if you see me walking in town, come up to me and say, hey, I heard your show and I learned this, or tell me more about that, or whatever. I I am a school teacher by profession. I love to share the things that I've seen and know with people. And I love conversations. You don't have to agree 100% with me, but at least we can have a civil conversation. We can learn from each other. And if you have information that I should have, I'm happy to read it. I like to learn and I like to share. So if we can all get that perspective that we work together to educate all of us, I think we will be in a much better place. So good night. Take care.
Kathy will be back next week with another new episode of Behind the Scenes, right here on Valley 104.9 Northwest Eclectic.